You're listening to The Inner Athlete, a podcast that inspires athletes on their journey. My name is Anna Rantala and I'm a beach volleyball player from Finland. I love to connect and learn from others, so here I am, sitting down with different athletes and coaches to talk about life and how has sports shaped our ways of thinking. Join us to have some meaningful moments and let's dive deep into the layers of the mind. This is The Inner Athlete. Quick disclaimer, I am not a mental health professional. I am here to have meaningful conversations and hopefully inspire along the way. I am super excited for this particular episode. And by the way, Happy New Year, 2022. Wow. We had such an inspiring conversation with my guest, and I cannot wait for you to hear this episode. So today's guest is a professional football player from England. He is playing in the English League and his name is Joe Dudu. He has such an inspiring story to tell. What a mindset. He's such a hard worker and you are just going to be mind blown and very inspired after you hear this episode. We are going to talk about the mental toughness, the overall stories of his life and his journey, what he has learned, what have been the biggest obstacles in his life, and he's also recommending some good books. So stay tuned for this one and let's go ahead and listen to the episode.
Here we go. Can you see me? Everything good?
Yeah, everything good, and I can hear you really well. Okay. And yeah. Hey, thanks for finally, we got a time and we got together. I know it took forever, but that's okay.
To be fair, I think we're both quite busy, so it's not going to be easy to find like the middle ground to get something going.
Exactly. Hey, but let's get started. Once again, thanks Joe. It's so good to see you and have you here. Let's start with the basics. Very basic but important question. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm good. As usual, working, busy schedule as an athlete, playing a game every 3 days. So my schedule at the moment is very busy, but
that
I'm
is
well,
so busy.
Healthy. Yeah. Yes. So I'm healthy. Most of the time tired, but everything's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yourself?
I'm good. Yeah, I've been busy as well. Unfortunately, not games yet. Maybe in the spring, but yeah, busy with other stuff. And I'm good. I'm doing good. Yeah, thanks.
Good.
Hey, tell everybody, who is Joe? I always like to ask this question for my guests because it's a tricky question if you really start thinking about it. But just tell who are you.
Joe, who is Joe? Yeah, that's the first time I've been asked that. Okay. Well, I'll say Joe, I'll be a professional athlete, play footballer, professional footballer for, at the moment, Doncaster, played for some, various clubs in England, tried, maybe short term abroad, but, Joe, just a usual athlete, you know, from a very young age. You know, I always loved to play football, so it's always been a goal of mine to make it a profession. So worked very hard and made a career from it, and that's it.
You said you started playing when, or that it was always a goal for you or a dream to become a professional. How did your like football career started when you were like really young? Did you always play, or how did you kind of like think that, okay, I want to play football? Like, how did that start?
Yeah. It was more of an escape when I was younger. I just played football as something I loved, like, you know, challenging games and kind of team sport, you know, the competitive nature of it. So football was probably my first example to basically real life, you know, competing. And from a young age, I played a lot of games on the street football.
Yeah.
You know, we'll gather like, you know, a lot of the, you know, my friends on the street who live nearby, we come together. We'll get like maybe a little side road, literally in the middle of the road, put two stones. Obviously grew up in Ghana. Well, didn't grow up in Ghana, I was born in Ghana. So
yeah,
we put two stones either side. And then we'll just play for maybe 2-3 hours straight, direct in the 30 degree heat. And from then I just kept playing, moved over to England with my grandmother.
Yep. And how old were you when you moved from Ghana?
I came when I was in year 5 going into year 6. So I think I was maybe 8-9 years old.
Okay.
At the time. So probably 9. I'll say. So we came and it was a different culture, a different environment, but I don't think it was like I wanted to be a professional straight away. It was more like I enjoyed the game. I wanted to play this game every day. So I wasn't thinking of becoming a professional, really. I just something I did for fun, and I wanted to be very good at it. So I just practiced, and I liked the challenge of trying to learn new things about it. So I just played a lot of football in the streets, and went from then to play for some school teams and some teams for my city. So Nottingham City Boys, played for them. And from then I went into signed for a proper club at the age of 13.
Yeah, that's awesome. So yeah, that's pretty cool. So you started playing when we're really young. You just enjoyed it. You played with your friends, you played on the streets, and then you didn't really even think that this could be like, or that you didn't necessarily want to become a professional. You just knew that you enjoyed it, and then you just gradually got better. But you said, so you were born in Ghana and you were about 9 years old when you moved to England.
Yeah.
How was that shift? Like how was that for you? Like obviously you were a kid, really young, but you know, like life mentally wise and then also like football wise, how was that shift in your life?
It was different. It's a different culture shock, if I may say. It was, everything was, Ghana's hot, England is cold.
Right.
So
right.
That's the first step. It was the football we played was different. You know, we played barefoot because it's Africa. So we don't, we do everything pretty much. It's either flip flops or barefoot. So it was different to kids playing on a grass here. So that was a different thing that I had to get used to. And the environment was different. You know, it was different food, different culture, different way of thinking. I had to adjust to that very quickly. So for me, it was very different, you know, and I got used to it quite quickly because I made some friends straight away through football. And from then I started to learn the way of life here. And it took maybe many years, maybe 2-3 years until I fully adjusted. I was still in a Ghanaian frame of mind, or the Ghanaian clock. So I was still waking up early, as you would in Africa. The sun's out about 5 a.m. So we were up very early. And from then, first couple of years, I start to adapt to the English way of life. And from then, it's just been that, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's probably a lot that, like, you know, I cannot even imagine like what you've been through and like how the change has been. But was football right away? Like you said, obviously there was differences. You know, you played in the grass versus like on the streets. But other than that, was it like just easy to go into the football in England, or did your did you live with your grandparents or?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I live with my grandparents. Yeah.
Yeah, and was it like they accepted? You know, was it like easy shift, or was there some difficulties with that?
Not really, because I didn't really want to be a footballer at first. I actually wanted to be more into like the studies. You know, like I was into science at that point. You know, so I wasn't really thinking about football, but I just knew it was something I couldn't stop doing. You know, so over time it became like, okay, I enjoy this more than anything. So it was difficult at first to obviously being a young kid, it's not many parents that would say, I want my child to become a footballer because they know it's difficult, you know. There's millions of people that want to be footballers. But for me, I didn't think of it that way. I just wanted to enjoy the game. I didn't want to take it too seriously, you know. So at the start, I just went to school and I played. But the problem was when I got playing, I was too competitive. So when you get that mix of, you know, playing something for fun, and then once we kick off and then becomes too competitive and you want to fight to win, you start thinking, okay, maybe this, I might love this game more than I think. So at the start, it was difficult because I didn't have the resources to go and play or train as much, but I made some friends. We played for the same teams, and from then started going regularly. Well, mainly I was playing for school, a lot of games for school. And I think that was one of the main things that happened early, playing for school, which gave me the license to play on bigger games and not play street football too much, start to adjust to bigger pitches and playing as a team.
Yeah. Now when you kind of like look back, and we're going to go more into detail like to your career and stuff, but just like talking about the street football, do you think that kind of has, you know, like benefit you in your career, like kind of get like some kind of like grit, or, you know, some like, how do you feel about that? Do you think that like benefit you when you have played street football so much?
Yeah, I'll definitely say so, because street football is different. If you kick the ball wrong, you're gonna hurt yourself.
All right,
because it's concrete, so
yeah,
it makes you it gives you better control of the ball, and you play against most street guys who are, I don't know, not from a poor background. You could say that, from more a poor, you know, poor background, and everybody's kind of like hard headed. And they're very good players as well. So you grow up playing against some of the best, you know, in the neighborhood in terms of football. You know, you wouldn't say they're not playing for academies or for teams, but the skill level was very high. So having to play against people like that on a daily basis, you clash a lot because they're good, you're good, and you want to win, they want to win. So it made it more fun, but there's an aspect of playing street football, I think, for me, is important, like for everybody, because I think it's the roots of football. You don't think about it until you get older, and you really start to miss it when you become older and everything is more controlled.
Right.
It's something that I personally enjoyed, and it shaped a lot of, you know, what I am and my competitive nature as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. I bet you kind of like, what you have now, for example, and, you know, playing the professional teams and, you know, everything's taken care of and like, just like this high life sort of, and then you can't compare it to the street football. Yeah, it's...
No, you can't compare. Yeah, it's different, right. It's a different environment. Yeah, right. you got cuts every day, grazes on your feet, you know, sprained toe, or, you know, missing a ball and kicking the floor is a painful experience, but it's one that is worth it at the end.
Yeah, for sure. That makes you tough, and of course, like makes you. Like that's pretty cool.
Exactly. Yeah, you need that. You need that. You need that.
Yeah, that's cool. So you kind of already said a little bit after, you know, when you were like 9-10 years old, you moved to England, and then you started playing for the schools, and then you were pretty young when you went with the Leicester Academy. Is that correct?
Yeah, very young.
So how did that happen?
I think I went when I was about 12 or 13 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, I think because they tried to get me, I think it was 13. I'm not sure. It's a long time ago, but I didn't want to go. I didn't want to go at first because I was enjoying playing local football, you know, with my local team. I was enjoying school football because you got the freedom to do whatever you want, you know.
Yeah.
When you go to a team, you're in a structure, you know, you're in a different environment. It's different. So I think I could have joined a year earlier, but we decided, no, I'm just going to finish playing for my local team, playing for the city as well, before I joined. And I think I joined at 13, I signed my first 2 years there. And yeah, I stayed there until I was 20.
Wow. So yeah, that's a long time. So you were there for 7 years. And when you first signed your first contract with them, so educate me a little bit about like the football, you know, so you go into a academy and you sign, like, what kind of contract was it? I know you have some kind of like academy that you're not in the, like, the Premier League team, but you're, you know, some, so talk about that contract and how does that work?
It's basically like a basic academy contract, you know. So, you come in, obviously they're going to teach you a lot about the game. Develop your body, develop your mind, and teach you things that, you know, only professional clubs can teach you. It's just a basic contract at first where you become an academy player, so you can work your way up to a scholarship, which is the most important one, before the pro contract.
Okay.
So the academy football really starts. You can start at under, I don't even know what age it starts, but you know, you got kids playing from under eights upwards. You know, I've had some friends that played from under eights all the way to the first team at one club.
Oh my God, which is 8 years old.
Yeah, from under eight all the way. So they spend their whole life, pretty much through football life, at one club. And they work their way all the way from eight to the first team at the age of maybe 19, 20 years old. So so it's like that, but the main challenge is the first maybe 3 years, two years, because on under 13 to under 15 is when you go up to where you have to prove yourself for the next level, which is the scholarship to become a youth team player. And from youth team player, you have to do a mandatory 2 years. So you sign your youth team deal when you're just about to leave school. So when you leave school, obviously normal people go to college. You don't go to college, you go to football, play football full-time. So you become a full-time professional footballer. You're not a professional yet, but you're just a full-time youth team player, which is the 1 year or 2 years. For me personally, I was lucky enough. I was doing very well from the age of 13 upwards to 15. I was playing above my age some of the time. So I got my professional contract at the age of, I think, 15 or 16. So usually you don't get a contract until you turn 17, 18. So at that time, I got it maybe 2 years earlier, which means that I only have to spend 1 year on a scholarship contract. And when I turn 17, I can be a professional full pro. So when I turned 17, I already had a contract to obviously put me into the pro category, and I had a 2 years contract. So I went straight from basically under 13s, 14s, 15s, signed my pro contract for 1 year scholarship, which is mandatory because you have to still have to do school the first year and the second year. So even though you're a pro on your second year, you still have to do school. So you play football and did college once a week, which is on a Wednesday. We did that for maybe a year. I did that for a year. And then my pro professional contract kicked in. And then the second year I completed that and you're full-time pro. But that's not the end of it, you see. You still have to make it first team, even though you're a pro.
Right.
So everybody think when you sign a professional contract, you've made it. No, it doesn't mean that. You know, it means you're knocking on the door and you need to take the final step to establish yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's just a lot from the age of 13 all the way to like 17. I mean, there's a lot. Do you remember how you felt? Were you kind of confused how things were happening so fast, or were you kind of like, just, I want more, like, this is what I want, like, yes, yes, yes? Or did you really even think about it? Like, how did you, do you remember how you felt? Because that's really young to experience all of that.
If I'm being honest, I didn't care.
Yeah.
I didn't care. I was like, I didn't care that I signed the contract. So I was still, I don't know, I was young. I still played for fun. I still do now.
Yeah, well,
a bit
that's
more
great.
serious now. But I didn't care really that I was, you know, I signed all these. I signed a contract with Leicester. I didn't really care. It wasn't any different. I still played with freedom. But I knew as well that I had things that I was very good at, and there was things that I needed to learn from the coaches, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I was thinking, okay, they think I'm pretty good now, but if I work really hard and listen to the coaches, I could be even better, you know. And that excited me to basically push myself from under 13, 14 onwards to really learn as much as possible from the coaches, because they had experience that I didn't have. And having a raw talent, it's not enough, you know. You need to learn, you know, the tactical side, you know, the strength side, you know, physical. There's so much you have to learn when you leave, you know, when you leave home and you have to go into the full-time kind of level. So, yeah, I had so much to learn, but I didn't really care at first until I turned 15, when everything started to accelerate, where I was, I was doing better above my age.
Yeah.
So people really started to take me serious. So I started to say, okay, maybe I need to take this a bit more serious now.
Yeah.
So I started from 15, you know, really watching a lot of players, you know, like some of my idols. I was watching a lot of Kaká, who's a midfielder. At that point, I was playing as a midfielder. So I was watching a lot of players every day, at least, I think, maybe an hour or two a day on YouTube, you know, trying to learn as much. I started to learn about nutrition. I tried to learn, at the age of 15 about my body as well, how to get stronger, you know, how to get mentally tough as well. I started reading books at the age of 15 on mental strength, you know, trying to teach myself so much things that I had nobody really to teach me on that kind of, on these kind of topics. So I took upon myself to do a lot of research and teach myself, and I've been teaching myself since, to this day, from 15 onwards now to 26.
Yeah, that sounds so inspiring. That's so something happened when you turned 15. You were like, now I'm gonna do this, you know, some kind of shift almost sort of like happened. What did you kind of learn about the mental toughness? Like, what was something that you wanted to learn about that? Like, why was that a big thing for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I was a bit, growing where I grew up, in an environment where it's not the best, but it's challenging. So you adapt to your environment. You are basically your environment. I am my environment, because if it's a tough environment, I'm tough. If it's very challenging, I'm always trying to, you know, I'm always got my guard up and ready, you know, in case something happens. So I was always facing different challenges when I was young, basically all my life, really. So there was things that I was lacking at a young age in terms of, you know, I didn't have like a role model in terms of a father figure around to teach certain things. So I had to learn myself quickly, because I knew my flaws, which was controlling, you know, your emotions, you know, when you win or lose, you know, how to take it, you know, the discipline side of, you know, doing things consistently. So there was a lot I needed to learn, and the answers weren't being given to, I didn't have anybody to give me the answers. So the next part of learning these things was reading. So I think I read, somebody advised me the Chin Paradox at the age of 15 or 16.
Yeah.
And that was one of the first books I read. And that opened my eyes to a lot of questions I was asking myself, or a lot of the problems I was having, because I wanted to win. I couldn't accept losing. I wanted to be the best. I was demanding of everybody. I wanted everybody to have the same mentality as me, but it doesn't work the same.
Yeah.
So you always felt like you're an outsider. And for me, it sounded easy what everybody needs to do for us to win. But for everybody else, they didn't see it that way, you know?
Right.
So I had to learn to obviously control that kind of emotion and learn a lot, start reading about leadership and just everything about, you know, what a professional athlete needs to obviously know to become the best at his craft. And from then, I've just been reading a lot, even to this day.
Yeah.
And learning as much as possible about the mental aspect, which in my opinion is the most important part of being an athlete, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would totally agree. This is the podcast is the inner athlete, the inner, you know, like I think at certain level, like everybody have the skill, like obviously everybody can do that, but then it's up to like what's happening here in our mind.
So I
totally agree. I mean, but that's just really inspiring that you were pretty young still to understand those things and take ownership and be like, hey, I want to actually learn. And like you said, how you said you didn't really have a father figure, how you kind of like understood that as well, that you need that, I don't know, like role for somewhere else then, like, you know, because you said like answers weren't given to you, so you kind of had to figure things on your own a lot. So I'm just mind blown. Wow. That sounds really cool.
It was different, you know. I think I didn't have time, you know. In my mind, I felt like I didn't have time, but I had a lot of time to learn. You know, and I wanted to make an impact in the sport very quickly, because I knew I had something and it just needed polishing. And the most important part of being an athlete is the mental part, and for me, I had to learn that quickly, you know. So for me, I had no choice, but I had to find a way to learn it and basically search. And as time went on, it just kept coming to me. New books, new ideas, new ways of thinking start coming to me. And when you're 16, 17 years old, it's hard to understand some of these like deep, you know, mental thoughts, or, you know, reading books from some of the most smartest people on the planet. You know, you're trying to piece puzzles together.
Right.
And the scary thing is you don't piece the puzzle, but you don't really like piece it together early. You have to read maybe a lot of books, and maybe 10, 20, 15, 30 books down the line, you realize, oh, the first book I read, this was what he was saying.
Right.
Because it all comes together.
Yeah.
As you gain more experience in reading other people. So I learned early that a little trick I thought about, it's a little trick I've thought in my head that, you know, I'm only going to live one lifetime. But if I can read as much biographies about some of the best people to achieve great things in life, I'm taking their lifetime and adding it to mine. So I should be able to avoid as much mistakes as possible. So I thought, oh, okay, let me read as much biographies as possible. So I started reading about Bruce Lee, Mandela, Zlatan, Kaká, as much athletes as possible, even normal people, you know, like some presidents, just anybody that's achieved something good. And you just realize over time that, oh, they all make similar mistakes.
Right, no, like we're all just human. You know?
Yeah, we're all just human. You make similar mistakes. And, oh, he made the same mistake that I made. Oh, it's not that bad. You know, it's not that deep. You know, it's not, you know, you shouldn't be thinking too much emotional about it. So over time, I started to think, oh, if I can take that experience, as the years goes on, I should be able to get to where I want to get to quicker, because I'm taking their experience with me. So I should be able to avoid some mistakes, but not all of them. I was still making a lot of mistakes, but if I can minimize my mistakes by 10-20%, it gets me there a little bit quicker, you know, by just doing that.
Yeah, that's really, really well said and really like well thought. I really like that idea, how you know, we only have one life, and if you read as many of like others like lives and what they've done, you can kind of take their life sort of with you and like learn from it. And
it's like a shortcut.
Yeah, right. That's so cool.
It's like a shortcut.
Yeah.
Because you need it. You need it, in my opinion, because I don't know. There's some mistakes they'll make that I will make. Maybe they'll be the same ones. But what I found out is that I can see it coming because I've read about it from somebody else. If you understand what I mean.
There'll be
things that I could have missed and it would have cost me 1 or 2 years of my life. But because I read this or read it from, let's say some, for example, Nelson Mandela, I read this from him through his biography. It saved me 1 or 2 years of this mistake. You know, or because I read this, I made this mistake at the age of 21, 22. That means I still got time.
Right.
It accelerates you, but you make mistakes that would have lost you time. But because you read the book, you make mistakes that actually save you more time.
That's so good.
It's a bit complex.
But I love that. That's so good. I've never thought of that. That's so good. Let's go a little bit back into the time that you were with Leicester and when you signed your first professional contract with them. You were 17, and then I heard that you, in your debut, you did a hat trick in a was that a FA Cup game? Am I correct?
That was a League Cup. League Cup game. I was 20. I was 20 when I done it.
Right.
I was 20, but it was a League Cup game that day.
And that was your first. Yeah. That was like your debut. That's when you played.
Yeah.
And you just went there and scored a hat trick, and then the whole everybody just freaked out. How did you feel? Like, what was going on? Like, was that another kind of turning point? Like, this is a lot, or did you just once again enjoy just the football and it just kind of happened? Or
I was in a different frame of mind back then.
Yeah.
Not weirdly, but I expected myself to be in that frame of mind because everybody was very excited and happy for me, but I was pretty much I was normal. I didn't actually care I scored a hat trick because I kind of expected it. Because I worked so hard for many years, like just for this one opportunity. So it wasn't like opportunity's come. Oh, he got a hat trick, the best possible scenario for me, you know. Like, I visioned this like very early that, you know, I'm capable of that. And I worked so hard. So when the opportunity came, the hat trick wasn't enough for me, you know. I had to stop myself, you know. I had to be told to enjoy it because you go through difficult times and you should enjoy, you know, some of your best times. And I didn't enjoy as much as I should have because for me, that wasn't it. I still thought I'd not made it because I scored a hat trick. I had to prove myself again and again and again for me to say, okay, yeah, you've done it. But in my mind, I was prepared for it. I was prepared for that opportunity. So I wasn't surprised it went that way because the best possible scenario that I wanted for myself is to go there and score 1 or 2 goals.
Yeah.
Preferably a hat trick to make a statement. And when it happened, I wasn't shocked because that's what I wanted. What I wanted to do. So when I say that to, when people ask me that, I said, I wasn't really shocked because I worked hard every day, did things that others didn't do just for this opportunity. So I was overly prepared for it.
Yeah.
And when it came, I was just normal. I just brushed it off. I said, no, it's not, this is not it. It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
You have to go do it again. You have to go make a career out of it. You have to go play 100 games, professional games. And then you say, okay, I think for me, that's worth it more than scoring a hat trick and then disappearing out of the scene a year or two later. You know, it's been 5 years since and I'm still here. So I think for me, that's better than just doing that. And I wanted to play in the Premier League. So that weekend, I made my debut in the Premier League. So for me, that topped it off. But still, a lot of people made a big fuss over it. But for me, I said, no, that's not enough.
Yeah.
That's not enough. I have to go get more.
Yeah. Well, that sounds really like cool and like healthy way to think about it, because that's how it is. I mean, you cannot really just do one thing in one game and then expect that now it's kind of like now you've made it, because then you think that then you haven't made it. Like that's the moment when you kind of like, but you said a little bit about like vision and that sort of thing, so you kind of like saw it coming because you were working hard. I love that, because I am all about like visualization and like manifesting and all of this. So did you do that kind of stuff when you were in that age, a lot of visualization and manifesting?
I was 20 at that time, so I've been 5 years into this new journey that I started at 15, reading books, talking to fellow professionals, picking their brain. I was in the gym every day, you know, first one in the building every day at Leicester. You know, I wanted to learn every sports scientist or physio, every injury I had, I wanted to learn why I got injured, why are we doing this to fix it? You know, I kind of educate myself. So I spoke to psychologists a lot, because the clubs obviously have psychologists at the club that we have to speak to. And I made a habit of trying to learn about the brain, you know, how it works, how, you know, that works. So from the age of 17, 18, I was really learning about some deep stuff, you know, in terms of speaking to some of the best of the best at their job, which lucky for me, I had that at a club, which is a very high level, you know, at the highest level she can play in the world. So Leicester provided a lot of things, and I took advantage of that to learn as much as possible, and wasn't just on a pitch or in a gym. When I turned, I think, 18, I started to learn more about the mind, started to speak to the psychologist a lot. You know, it was, you have to see him, but maybe once or twice a year. I was going maybe every week. To speak to him. He was recommending books and ideas, and I was trying them. Visualization, affirmation, you know, positive thinking, and that led to me reading so many books about the belief system and, you know, obstacles and how to overcome them and what to expect in life and or as an athlete. And for me, I did everything you can name: visualization, meditation, affirmation, read books on spiritual side, because I'm a Christian. So I was raised up as a Christian. So anything I could get my hand on, I just did it. I did it. And I thought, okay, if I keep doing this stuff, that should put me ahead of my competition, you know? And for me, that little 1% will help me on the pitch, you know, if you know more than your opponent. And I just wanted to make sure that I capitalize on what I'm doing, because once I'm done in sport, that's it. So I wanted to make sure that I do it to the best of my ability, no matter what the circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's so good. Do you still do that? You know, like meditate and do affirmation Yeah,
you don't lose it. It becomes like a routine. But over the years, what's happened is that I'm reading more complex books. I'm reading new things, you know, things I know now, you know, back then, you know, if you put it in front of me, I wouldn't have a clue what they are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But now I know certain things. And then what happens with experience is that you learn all these things for years. And as you start to get more intelligent and knowledgeable on it, you start to fine-tune it to what suits you, you know, to your routine and what you want. Because, for example, they say when you read books, you know, you're reading about somebody else's opinion, and then when you read it, you form your own opinion on it. So what I do is that I take pieces and say, oh, would this work in my life and my way of doing things? And then over the years, things that didn't work, I brush off. And then I adjust it certain ways. And for meditations, do I want to do 20 minutes? Do I want to do some people do hour? I don't have time. I don't like an hour. I think that's too long.
Yeah, same.
maybe when I retire, maybe, and I have a lot of time on my hands. But I just fine-tuned it to consistent kind of way of doing things where you're ticking the box every day in terms of keeping yourself in a good routine. And over the years, I just adjusted it to how I want it. And it's worked. And to this day, I'm still learning.
Yeah, I love that. What is your kind of like typical? Do you have a morning routine?
Morning routine. I used to meditate in the morning. But now I'm doing more of like, I meditate in different ways that I like to do it.
Yeah.
For example, I could wake up and I could just be chilling in bed for maybe, I don't have a time. I used to time myself when I did things. I used to do things the, you know, the way the book or manual used to say, meditate for 10 minutes. And, you know, what over the years, what I find out is that you don't need to do that. You can just wake up and just lie there and then not think about anything. And you are meditating. Mm.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I can be on the bus on the way to a game and I could just zone out and I'll be meditating, but I wouldn't, you know, you can do it whenever. It could be walking and you're meditating.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, so I just through the day, I just do certain things and which basically reaffirms that, oh, I'm meditating or I'm relaxing the mind. And over time, what I've learned is that whenever something's going on or I need to take a break or something, it's just automatic. You know, if you need to breathe, it's just automatic. You just calm down, even if it's just 30 seconds. You know, people say you need two to five minutes to focus the mind. No, you don't, in my opinion. I find that even 30 seconds to a minute during a difficult moment, you can refocus your mind by just breathing for 30 seconds, you know.
Yeah.
So I've got routines where it's not fixated on, you know, like a ritual of, right, I'm up, I need to go sit down, light some candles and meditate for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I can wake up and just lie there, or if I want to wake up straight away and go and eat, I'll just be eating and then randomly I'll just focus, you know. And over time, you just, what I find out is that focusing doesn't mean you have to sit there and meditate. Focusing can mean that you're having a conversation with somebody, a friend or a family member, and you just focus on them, you know, and listening. So there's so many different ways of seeing it, and I practice that every day without making it more of like a thing where it's a chore. You have to do it, you have to do it. No, you have to enjoy doing it.
Yeah, so that's so good that's so good, because it's kind of like, if you, you know, if you meditate only 10 minutes a day, I mean, that's great. But if you then, like, for the rest of the day, you're just like all over the place and not kind of like in the moment, or so then that doesn't really like matter. I mean, yeah, it can be great, but it's kind of like the rest matters the most.
You're right, because you can't meditate in the morning and then your mind is, you know, you don't even realize your mind is drifting away into some, into, you know, a mindset that you don't really like or you don't want to be at, you know.
Yeah.
Can you, they say, oh, focus the mind, but can you recognize when the mind is drifting off? That's my question, you know.
Yeah.
Not many people think that, you know. They can meditate in the morning, so, oh, that's it. See you tomorrow morning, you know.
Right.
And then they meditated, and then everything that meditation is for goes out the window for the rest of the day.
Right.
And you really, and then over time, it doesn't become a habit.
Yeah.
You know, you end up stopping it because you don't see the benefit of it. So I like to think of it that way.
Yeah, I like that too. And then also another thing, like you said about the take 30 seconds and just like take a deep breath instead of like meditating for a longer time, because when you play on the, you're on the, like in the game, you don't have time for like, hey, sorry, I'm gonna take,
no, you don't even have 30 seconds in the game.
right.
You so don't even have 30 seconds.
Like, you have to be in that moment, and that's kind of also preparing you for that you have to be able to do it all the time in a way.
For sure because in the game you don't have 30 seconds.
Yep.
You know, for example, if you miss a chance, for me personally, as a striker, if I miss a chance and I should have scored, you have to compose yourself within, I say, about 2-3 seconds.
Yeah.
So you can't think about what just happened. You have to move on quickly and concentrate on a game. So you have to refocus with literally, like, you know, click of a finger, literally. So it's you're right. It's not something that in a game you got, you know, 3 minutes to say, okay, it's not going well. Okay. Yeah,
like, sorry, ref, I need to take a break. Yeah.
time out, 3 minutes. Yeah. Let me recompose myself. No, you don't have that.
Yeah. But I'm so happy we're talking about this, because I think it's still like the mental health and like meditation is some sort of like taboo still in the like in everywhere, but especially in the sports, and I would say especially in the like male sports. I think for men I don't know, but I just feel like it's even more kind of like a like meditation. What is that? You know, like that's not for me. I don't need that. Which I get. It can be like intimidating at first and be kind of like this thought that I need to sit for 30 minutes and be really quiet and just like, and then it's really difficult to concentrate. But you know, it's not really like that. So I'm really happy we're talking about this.
Yeah, it's a good thing you said that, because not everybody thinks it's kind of like whack, you know, wacky, or it's spiritualism or whatever word you want to use for it.
Yeah.
I've read books where you had some of the toughest warriors from the back in the day, you know, the Spartans or whatever, you know, they were very big on focus and meditation. You know, there's a lot of books on some of the best warriors to walk the planet. They meditate, you know. Some of, you know, men like military, or, you know, these people meditate. These are the most dangerous people to ever walk the planet or the earth. They meditate. So when you think about, you know, it's not cool to meditate or to focus your mind, you know, some of the people that, if you've done anything good on this planet, you know, they know to really focus their mind and meditate or know something about it. So if you think they're, you know, if that person's it's your idol, you know, ready, or something like that, then they meditated or something along the lines, you know. Let's talk about Nelson Mandela, you know. He was in prison for a long time. And I'm very sure he spent most of the years meditating, you know, to figure out, you know, because before he went to prison, I know he was quite a bit of an extremist, you know, but when he came out, he was a lot more, had more compassion, you know. So I think that takes some meditating and reflecting, you know, to come out of prison and have the mindset like that. So I personally disagree with anyone that says it's not, it's been part of human beings' nature for a long time. Maybe in the modern day, it's not important, but for me, it is.
Yeah, for me too. I agree. I'm on the same team here with you. This is good. Yeah. And I hope, and I think it's really like coming more and more into the sports world as well all the time. And athletes, they know that's like something we should really be like thinking about and maybe try and do it. But it's just really the knowledge still that people think that it's like too hard or not for me or stuff. But slowly we're changing the world.
Slowly. But I think there'll be certain people that really do it. I don't think it will be soon.
Let's go back to your kind of like the timeline, your career.
We're going drifting off way.
I know. But we still have some kind of timeline here. So now you're in Leicester, and then you went to play somewhere else, right? So
Rangers, yes. Rangers,
In Scottish Premier League.
Scotland,
How was that?
It was good. I enjoyed it. Signed a long-term deal there, 4 years. So I was, I wanted to work under the manager there, who's at the time and still is one of the best coaches for young players. So I was young. I wanted to learn.
Yeah.
And it's one of the biggest clubs in the world. So it's a no-brainer that I go there and learn. So it was an amazing experience. And I enjoyed it, you know.
Yeah, that sounds like it. And you also played in Turkey. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. yes, that was brief.
Yeah, I remember you guys weren't there for a long time. Wasn't for you?
No, it wasn't for me. It wasn't a time for that. I was, in my opinion, when I went, it's a lovely place. I learned a lot there. I learned a lot from the Turkish people because they live a very slow life.
Okay. You know,
so at that time when I went, I was very serious and very routine orientated, and they slowed my life right down because what I learned from them was they live normal, even as athletes, you know? They live normal. They just have a cake because they enjoy a cake.
Right.
Because it's bad for your body. But it makes them feel good, you know?
Right.
You know, when they rested, they rested. They finished training and they literally went for a break.
Right.
You know, they didn't hang around. They went to the cafe and just sat there and they just spoke to each other. They went on the phone, you know, nothing. They just went and got coffee. The culture was different, you know? It's like, you know, in England or anywhere else, it's like everything is fast.
Yeah.
They went for coffee and it's not like they're at a cafe for an hour. I go here. They were there for 5 hours. You know, we were leaving the cafe. Sometimes we get to the cafe like 6 o'clock and I'm just getting home at 10:30.
You know?
Yeah. And I was doing that every day and I'm like, whoa. But then over time, I'm like, I like this.
Yeah, I guess it's really like life, living in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, living in the moment, and they just thinking, why so serious?
Yeah.
You know, you still got to live your life, you know. And but the football wasn't for me. I thought I was too young to be there. I still had a lot to do, and I wanted to come back home.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was during COVID, so I wasn't seeing the family. And so for me, I wanted to come back, and there was some teams that wanted me back here. Yeah. And a lot of good options, so I came back.
Yeah, and now you're happy where you are now? You like it there?
Yes, it's perfect. It's perfect. Good environment, good people, and only 2 months in, but yeah, I love it.
Yeah, that sounds good. And it's pretty close to your home, right? So you can
get
home and then see
and then travel in. Yeah,
yes,
I've been traveling.
Yeah.
So which is perfect.
Yeah, that sounds really good. And that's like crazy again how you know you went to Turkey and that wasn't your thing, but still you learned like a valuable lesson there and you like learned something, you know.
Massive.
Like, yeah. So I think everything has a purpose and they happen for a reason.
That's true, because you know, when you go to Turkey, you just think, okay, you know, it's a good life, play football, enjoy. But it's just, it's different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, it makes you realize, you know, that what you have at home is unbelievable.
you know,
sometimes. And some people are living in different circumstances in terms of other athletes, you know?
Yeah.
Different challenges, uncertainty, young. But the team I went to had a lot of young players. So it's good to be there and players to obviously ask questions and have some answers to. Some of them I didn't have answers to,
but
most of them I did, and I enjoyed that, you know, being around good people, and they were genuinely nice people, you know. But it was short, but keep in touch with some of them still, so it's all good.
Hey, we have a few more questions left.
Okay,
they are pretty hard, but get ready.
Okay.
I don't know. Just like maybe the first one, if you would have to think about the hardest obstacle in your life that you kind of like overcome, what has it been and what have you learned from it?
Oh, that's a good question. Hardest obstacle. Oh, I've been through a lot of obstacles. Jeez.
Yeah.
I think they're all as hard as each other, unfortunately. I've been through 1,000 obstacles. Oh, jeez. Hardest obstacle. That's a tough question. I think I know what it is. It's just hardest. I wouldn't call it an obstacle, but it would. I would call it standing by your principles.
Okay.
No matter how much it's going to cost you.
Okay.
In terms of your livelihood and financially for your family, everything, you know, just standing up to what you believe in terms of, I wouldn't call it an obstacle, but I call it a challenge.
Yeah.
Because, well, you can't call it an obstacle actually, because for example, I do things that I want to do in terms of I want to enjoy it and I look into it and say, okay, this is the right thing to do. But I can't be persuaded or bought into doing something I don't want to do.
Yeah.
In terms of if you paid me a lot of money or said, oh, I'll give you 1,000,000 gold coins if you do this and I think it's not right, I won't do it.
Yeah.
So I probably say probably along them lines of around that, I stand by something I want to do no matter how much it's going to cost or what I will lose if I don't do it.
Yeah.
So I'll probably say I've got a lot of issues like that in terms of stories, but probably standing my ground in terms of signing for a team or staying at a club
or leave
because I don't agree with the way they do things.
Yeah.
For example, I want to leave and maybe if I was treated a certain way and I feel it wasn't right, I stood up to myself and said, no, no matter what you say or what you do, I have to go because what you did is not right. No matter what you throw at me or anything, I have to go. And I think I stand by certain principles and it leads to a lot of obstacles because you come across challenges when you stand up for yourself. And I'll say that's been one of the main ones. So I can't, there's so many stories. I can't really go into some of them because it's too long and deep.
Yeah, you have to write your own book about them.
Yeah, but I tend to stand by what I believe is right I don't budge on it at all. No matter what I'll lose, even if I'll lose my whole career to it, I will stand by these principles in terms of it's got to be the right thing to do. And, you know, I demand, you know, respect because I will give a lot of respect back to somebody. But if I don't get it back, I won't do anything to please anybody. I'll go my own way and I just move on with my life. And so I'll probably say these are the things that probably the biggest obstacle is myself because I stand by these things.
Yeah, that's powerful.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you kind of like when you had your first biggest obstacles or when you started like realizing when you experienced these moments, was it like easy from right from the first moment kind of like stand up for yourself and like have those beliefs and like be like this is the right thing to do? Or was it hard at first and then it kind of got better? Or were you always like that? Yeah, you know, like this is the right thing to do.
It was hard at first because I always had that in me. I think that's one of I'd probably say a positive but a flaw as well.
Yeah.
Because I feel strongly, when I feel strongly about something, I make sure that I stand with it. But at the end of the day, I always check myself and rethink and think, don't make decisions on emotion.
Yeah.
Because you make the worst decisions when you're emotional.
Yeah.
So I try and make sure that if I've got an issue with you, I wouldn't make a decision to stop talking to you because I'm mad at you at the time.
Yeah.
You know, you have to really think about it before you make a decision. So my first obstacle, it was hard. It was more painful because you felt like you didn't deserve it. You know, what happened, you didn't deserve it. But then it hurts you, the fact that it hurts because of what you're going to do in terms of myself. I know, you know, I'm going to either leave or that's me done now. That's the final straw. And yeah. I'm going to go. So I think that's more painful, the fact that it hurts that, oh, okay, this has happened to me. I'm not mm-hmm. going to stay. I'm off. But you really wanted to stay and carry on what you're doing. But you just in your mind, you say, no, that's it. I don't want, I can't do it anymore. So I think my first one felt like that. It was more of something that it was more painful, the fact that you put so much into something. But yeah, I can't carry on the way it is. You just have to move on. And I think that's why I fell on my first obstacle, major one in terms of life altering.
Yeah, like obstacle. Of course it was hard. Yeah. Like of course it was a hard one, but in the way, like your intuition knew, and you kind of knew, but it was like
that you had to do it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but it's hard. But many people, I say 99.9% of people would not stand by that because it's easy to just say, okay, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Next one, next time.
Yeah.
Well, you thought, okay, well, I was very disrespected. The way they acted was wrong. Everything was, you know, all the boxes ticked that it's wrong.
Yeah.
And you know in your mind, you know, it's like being in a bad relationship.
Yeah.
You know, all the signs are telling you, right, I've got to leave.
Mm.
You know, all the boxes are ticking, I've got to leave. But you're like, okay, I've got to stay. Yeah. Even though you know it's a bad idea too.
Yeah.
And 99.9% of people would stay. Well, me, I said, no. No matter what it is, how hard it might get, I'm going to back myself. And to this day, I'm still doing that. You know, so I've been backing myself. And to me, that means that you're going to jump across a lot of obstacles because you're swimming against the tide. And I'm still swimming.
And you have to have to live that way. I mean, if you have that like strong intuition telling you that way and you know that's the way to go, it's going to be hard. But like nice and good things won't come easy. I mean, it's hard.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. Because if you think about it, not many people stand by what they believe in terms of, you know, I think it's a old-fashioned mentality of, you know, in the old-school way, people stood up for what they believed. You know, nowadays it's different. You say one thing, but you don't really believe it.
Mm.
The next one, it's like, oh, yeah, I wasn't really serious, you know. So I try and implement, you know, you live one life again. Once you're gone, you're gone. But, you know, don't be remembered for the person that did somebody wrong when you know it was the wrong thing to do.
Mm.
You know, leave with your character and, you know, dignity intact, you know. It's worth more than anything, you know, any money in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I agree. You cannot really live this life by trying to please others or...
No.
Do things that you know are wrong, but you're still doing them. Like that's just not the way. That's your life. Yeah,
it's not.
Yeah,
but you can make mistakes. You can make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. No problem. Yeah. But you know, you learn from it, and you know, you stand by what you believe, no matter what it will cost you. And sometimes it costs too much. So some people say no, I can't do it.
Yeah, but you always figure it out.
I definitely say that. That's probably the biggest obstacle to myself.
Okay. Last question then. I know this is a long question again, and you could write another book about this. But if you think about your life and sports and how close sports has been to you the whole time, overall, how would you say that sports has affected your life and your mindset and really just you, like how did that affect you?
It's a very good question. I will honestly say I think it's affected my whole life. Really, even though I've been a professional footballer for probably almost 10 years now.
Yeah.
But that 10 years feels like my whole life.
Yeah.
Like all I ever known is playing football. That's what it feels like. So I think it alters your life, but you have a choice, you see. You can let it take over, or you almost kind of become aware of what's going on in terms of, you know, sports or being an athlete, or, you know, living that life of an athlete.
Mm.
You know, it can take over your whole life, or you can stop and say, actually, hold on. It's actually quite minute in terms of your lifespan.
Yeah.
You know, for example, if I retire 35, 36, 38, whatever, stick with the rest of your life to live.
Yeah.
So you can't become too consumed in, sports is my whole life. No, you still got another life to live. You're not even scratched halfway yet.
Yeah.
You know, you reach halfway. So, but it does alter your whole way of being. The way you talk, the way you act, the way you think about things. But I think from some of the things I've learned over the years, I try and separate both. You know, when I'm being a footballer, I'm being a footballer. When I'm not, I need to really pay attention to not being a footballer.
Yeah.
You know, for example, I think I read something that says, when you're playing a game, play to the best that you can do it, you know. But when you are done playing a game, you know, and it's time to focus, you know, you focus the best you can. Or if it's time to eat junk food, enjoy the best you can.
Yeah, right. You know? Yeah.
If it's time to go to a party, do whatever you want. Enjoy it to the best you can, you know.
Like really live your best life.
Yeah, live your best life. So I think you have to become aware. But it does take over if you're not, if you don't pay attention, because it will affect your mood, you know?
Yeah.
You know, for example, if you have a bad day or a bad game and you're not aware when you come home and you don't, you know, switch off and reflect later or reflect on it or learn from it.
Yeah.
You can come home and be in a mad mood for a whole week.
Yeah.
And then you're waiting for a better outcome from your next game to be in a better mood.
Mm.
You know, that might take a week. But if you go through a bad spell of 6 months, it might take a year or two to recover. So you almost have to play a game, reflect. I think I read something, another thing I read. It says difference between a professional and an amateur is a professional will make mistakes or lose a game. They'll reflect, learn from it, and move on as quickly as possible. You know, I'm talking within a day. An amateur will think about it for a long time. And it will affect the next performance and the next performance. But the best that good at what they do, learn from it, and they move on to the next one. But they don't really dwell on the last problem they had. So, I'll definitely say that you have to separate, or it does sports consume your whole life if you allow it.
Yeah, that's well said. That's really well. I really like the fact how you know, when you're playing a game, play it as well as you can. When you're, let's say, partying, party as well as you can. When you're injured, deal with it as well as you can. You know, like, don't dwell on like what could have been or why this or
no. It's part of it. It's part of it. Like for example, like this is what I realized recently is that, you know, like most of your life, you're really gonna succeed or win out of 1,000, probably like not even probably 1% or 22%. Like most of the time you spend your life failing and doing something. You know what I mean? When you're in training, like you're like, oh, when you come home, you're like, oh, I did a great shot today. I remember that one great shot, but you forget you missed like 19 out of the 20. Yeah. But because you're so focused on becoming better at the shot, even the ones you hit wrong, or the ones you hit well but didn't land, you're like, oh, that was a good hit. Mm-hmm. But you spend most of your life failing, like, you know, so it's part of it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, as a footballer or as a, you know, for you, like volleyball, like, you know what I mean? Like, you're failing every day. Like, you know, that's what practice is. If you're not failing every day, there's no need to train, is there?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So you spend most of the time failing. So I think it's just part of it. It's the same in life, you know, like, it's just, you're going to fail. Like, nobody's going to allow you to win. It's like, you're not going to go to a game and your opponent's going to say, okay, oh, you prepared better than me, so I'm going to let you win. No, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think, in my opinion, it's part of it. And the quicker you embrace it, the easier it is, you know, to learn and move forward.
That's so true. And it's so simple also. Like, you know, we tend to overcomplicate things and we think about things and, you know, like speculate and all this. But when you really put it that simple, you know, just it's simple, you know, simple life. That's, you know, we don't need
exactly.
more.
Yeah. It's like the yin and the yang. You can't have the yin without the yang.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Yeah. So
yeah.
I live by that personally and it works for me, but I must say it's challenging at times, you know.
Yeah. Of course, everything is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's challenging at times. But as long as you remind yourself, like, okay, this is part of the process. You know, it really sorts itself out.
Yeah.
Everything just turns out how you want it. But you have to keep going.
Yeah, you have to trust the process. That's
yeah, good. Trust the process. No, that's a good one. Trust the process.
Hey, awesome. I think that's a perfect way to end this. Although we do have a quick questions.
Okay.
So are you ready for these ones?
Yeah.
Okay. Summer or winter?
Oh, winter.
Pancakes or waffles?
Pancakes.
Book or movie?
Book.
Rugby or cricket?
Oh, I hate both. I'll say cricket. It's less demanded.
Okay. Favorite book?
Oh, that is tough. Wow. Favorite book? A lot of you people are gonna try and get this now. The Inner Game of Tennis.
Oh yeah, nice one. Good one.
That's my favorite book so far. It might change in a week or two.
Yeah, nice. What about if you could be anyone for one day, who would it be?
That's a good question. I've never thought about that. Oh. Probably say Elon Musk at the moment.
Okay. Nice.
Because he's like, some of the things he's doing, it's not nothing to do with this planet, is it?
Yeah.
He's like thinking outside the box. So I like to just like
get in like his mind one
day. He's doing some like cool stuff. So like, you know, it's like always like going space or something. So I like to know what that's like.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, last one. This is a terrible one. But if you could be kind but not smart, or would you be smart but not kind?
Oh, so smart but not kind?
Yeah, so you would be really smart but not kind, or then you'd be really kind but not smart?
Kind but not smart, I'll say that.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, I think that's better.
Nice one, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, how can our listeners find you? Where can they find you the best?
They can find me JoeDodu14 on Insta.
Yeah.
Twitter, JoeDodu36. That's the only two platforms I'm on, really. I'm not that active, on social media, but I'm on Instagram, just JoeDodu. I'll be there.
Hey, thanks, Joe, so much. This was so inspirational. I am absolutely buzzing. Thank you.
No problem, it's a pleasure. Thank you.